Get on Team Shaq with WynnBET. We're playing parlays, boosting odds, and laying the wildest prop bets. Don't miss another game. Download the WynnBET sports betting app today.
Sign up today and win $200 in free bets when you place a $10 first-time wager on a straight bet or parlay. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
What's up, Marlins fans? Jeremy Taché here. And before we get to the content of this episode, as the Marlins are in the midst of their 10-game road trip, I wanted to talk to you about our sponsor who has been with us for over a month now. It's Symbol. Remember, Symbol is the stock market for sports that allows you to trade sports teams like stocks and earn cash payouts when your teams win. Symbol's blended sports and the stock market to offer you a new way to invest and to profit off your favorite teams without all the high fees and high losses of gambling. You can use your sports knowledge and specifically your knowledge of the Marlins to buy low, sell high, and earn cash payouts when your teams win. You can join me and the 2,000 plus early adopters who've started to invest in their favorite teams. I'll tell you guys this, I invested in the Marlins and they have gone up and down this season as their record has, but they're higher now than when I initially invested. So in order to be able to do this, all you have to do is visit www.symbol.app or visit the link in our description, symbol.app/swings. That's symbull.app/swings to create a free account when you deposit. And make sure to use the promo code SWINGS for a $10 deposit bonus to buy yourself a share of the Sim Marlins or any other Sim team. Again, symbol.app and use the promo code SWINGS for a $10 deposit bonus to help build your portfolio. Symbol.app. Start investing in your favorite teams so that when they win, you win. Now let's get to the show. Hello, Marlins fans, and welcome to another episode of Swings and Mishes. I'm your co-host and producer, Jeremy Taché, joined as always by Craig Mish. Craig, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Jeremy. It's great to be with you. Really exciting finish, at least to this, I'd say, two-thirds of the way through of this road trip. And no doubt, it's definitely been a fun month of April. I know that there are some injuries that we're going to get into and some things of that nature, but I think that the Marlins have played a lot of close games this year, and at the very least, that's what you can expect, I think, going forward. So great to be with you here today.
Yeah, it's great to be with you too, Craig. And since the last time we spoke here on Swings and Mishes, it's been about a week and a half, and there has been a lot of baseball played. We haven't spoken since before that first home series against the San Francisco Giants, where the Marlins took 2 out of 3 with late game heroics. Then they split against the Orioles, lost 3 of 4 to the Giants, but picked up a win with Pablo Lopez on the hill and scoring a bunch of runs late in that game. And now they took 2 of 3 from the Milwaukee Brewers. And throughout this stretch, the pitching has been good. Jesus Aguilar has been on fire. But in that same stretch, the Marlins lost Starling Marte to the IL. They lost Jorge Alfaro to the IL, Brian Anderson to the IL, Jazz Chisholm now to the IL. And in yesterday's game, Corey Dickerson and Garrett Cooper left early and were told day to day. So, Craig, what are your thoughts overall on the Marlins' play throughout that 6-6 stretch since the last time we've spoken?
Yeah, I think that this is kind of who they are. I think that without a doubt, they're banged up for sure. And I think that a lot of other clubs are banged up as well. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, look, at the beginning of the season, they looked like a 500 team. I do feel like their record indicates more or less that of who they are. They started off the season completely healthy outside of Sixto, but, you know, he wasn't going to pitch the first week anyway. Started off 1-6. So you just don't know in these scenarios, because there's so many injuries around the league, how a team will perform with or without their players. You, of course, want to have your players there. But I feel that they have been very up and down offensively. The pitching has been there for the most part all season long. The bullpen has been really good the last 2 weeks. And I think in order to stay afloat until these players come back at some point, one after the other, they're going to need to continue to pitch well. And mm-hmm. I, and you know something? I think they will. I think that they'll be in a lot of games, and a lot of games will come down, Jeremy, to the eighth and ninth inning, where they'll have opportunities to score runs and win. Some they will, some they won't. So, you know, I have a bigger view of this thing, and I do tend to think that they still can compete and they still can maybe even win the division. But I think that they're going to have to make a decision internally at some point, whether that's in a month or two, because this division, at least in April, doesn't look like anyone at least is running away with this thing. Right. And Miami is right there. So big decisions are going to have to be made. Are they going to fight for this thing, or are they just going to kind of, you know, kind of call up who they have and just go through the motions of it? And unfortunately, it's kind of been the way that I've seen it thus far, is just recycling some of the older guys who have been around and in the system. I personally would like to see, you know, some of the younger kids come up who we haven't seen or who didn't succeed the first time around. And we're just going to have to kind of see what their decisions are.
Yeah, certainly. And especially if there ends up being any prolonged time missed from either of those outfielders who left yesterday's game, we may need to see some of those younger kids. But if you split this season into thirds, like you mentioned, Craig, they started 2-6, that slow start. They're 9-7 since. Maybe that's more reflective of the team that they are, you know, and that is with losing a number of guys throughout that stretch. So like you mentioned, the pitching and the bullpen has been the key to carrying this team. But let's focus on those injuries for just a second. We mentioned the six guys that have gone down. Obviously, Brian Anderson and Jazz Chisholm and Starling Marte, Jorge Alfaro, all on the IL. Where do things stand at the moment in regard to the Marlins and their injury situation?
Yeah, I did a piece earlier in the week for the Herald, and Starling Marte is going to be out probably the longest, I would say, of all of them. And I know that it's been reported as a cracked rib. I'm going to assume that's correct, although Don Mattingly, several times when we were asked him about it, kept mentioning oblique. I'm not really even sure, not even sure that it really matters. I just think that he's going to be out for an extended period of time. And if he plays at all in May, I would be surprised. Anderson looks like he'll return this weekend, so it will be a very short stint for him. And as Mattingly said, and really opened up finally on, they got caught off guard. He, if they thought that they were going to have to put him on the injured list the day that they arrived on the road trip, then you do have to ask yourself the question, why did they go through that? And why did, you know, but again, they extended it to see if he could play. And then they had no choice but to call up Jose Devers, which was not optimal and honestly a mistake. They probably should have been better equipped on that road trip with somebody else to give them professional big league at bats. No indictment on Jose Devers, just not ready to play right now.
Right.
And then, you know, the other key injury, of course, is Jazz Chisholm. And it's a hamstring injury. And the hamstring is very important for a player like that that uses his speed. And the other thing, too, is that when you hear injuries and you hear the Marlins tell you about injuries, for the most part, they're going to be as optimistic as possible on every player. Mm-hmm. The managers will, the staff will, this is progressing, this guy's doing good. Very rarely are you ever going to hear, oh, my gosh, we're screwed. Like, you just don't hear that.
Right.
So that's my right. job to come in and tell you, like, hey, here's, like, the real deal here. So. With Jazz, you know, Mattingly yesterday at the press conference said, oh, yeah, we're hoping we'll get him back. Right. I mean, you really don't know. I mean, from what I was told was that this could be anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. So that kind of puts it a little bit beyond the 10-day window and a little bit below the 1 month window. And with a player like that is a franchise player, mm-hmm. you would have to imagine they're going to be supremely careful, just like what the Padres did with Fernando Tatis Jr. And they put him on the injured list as well, held him out a little longer. So Jazz will be back in May at some point. It would be a guess if I had to. And that's obviously a very big component. Eliezer Hernandez, I think, is going to be back sooner than later. I could see him coming back in May. Sixto Sanchez, I don't think, will be back as quickly. So we're talking about June. And then Edward Cabrera just has to have some minor league appearances before he comes right. back. So. You even though he is, as they say, progressing along, he's had injuries 2 years in a row now, and I would not expect him to see him until later in the summer. Did I miss anybody?
Yeah, right. It's such Alfaro
I missed.
Yeah, Alfaro's the one guy we still haven't touched on.
Yeah, hamstring again. You know, had it, didn't have it, had it again.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't have a firm timetable. The only thing that is interesting is that with the way that Sandy Leon has played, they do have an interesting decision to make a catcher mm-hmm. when Alfaro comes back, because they would basically have to DFA Sandy Leon in order to to keep Wallach and Alfaro on the roster. I don't think they
that's not something
that
I'm doing right now. Yeah, I don't think Leon has been terrific. I mean, he's hit since he's come up and played with the Marlins. He's hit 350 and he's been remarkable behind the plate, catching a couple Trevor Rogers gems and others. And so let's move from the guys who have been out, right? These hitters that are out for the Marlins to the guys who have helped carry the load as they've treaded water here. It's really been three guys. One is Jazz Chisholm, who's now out, obviously, and his play on the bases and in terms of a little bit of power. We saw it, you know, with McCovey Cove out in San Francisco. And then you have Jesus Aguilar and Corey Dickerson. Corey Dickerson, since the last time we spoke, has raised his batting average 60 points. He was hitting 260. He's hitting 320 now. And Jesus Aguilar has homers in five of his last six games. What are your thoughts on those two guys in particular, or really those three guys, if you'd like to touch on all three of them?
Yeah, Aguilar has carried the team over the last week. What else can you say? Mm-hmm. He's been fantastic. He's been better than I thought, without a doubt. And the power is back for him, too. He's been their best offensive weapon. He is just smashing everything, and he's leading the National League in runs driven in. I mean, what more can you say? He's been fantastic for them. And look, Duvall carried them for a couple days in Atlanta. Now Aguilar's carrying them even beyond, and that's all you need to stay in this with the pitching that they have. They needed like one guy to just go wild. Jazz did it for a bit. Duvall did it for a bit. And now it's Aguilar. So great for him. In terms of Corey Dickerson, you know, he is finishing up the month strong, which is so important because there have been 25 days this month, Jeremy, where you had to wonder a little bit, like what is Corey Dickerson delivering to this team? Hadn't hit a home run,
right?
Wasn't driving in any runs, wasn't impacting the ball, hitting it to the outfield. A lot of balls going to first base. So why is this important? Because Corey Dickerson doesn't figure into the long-term plans of the Marlins. Right. So, you know, either they would get a draft pick for him at the end of the season if he was to go. They could potentially even trade him sometime in July, or maybe not. Maybe carry him through the whole season and make a playoff push. But for a lot of reasons, he's important to get them to play better. And remember, I know the Marlins don't have a supremely high payroll. He's a pretty highly paid guy on the team. And the front office and ownership group approved the 2-year deal for Corey Dickerson that on this club is a fairly significantly well-played player. I know that's laughable to some people who look at Tatis at $40 million, but when you're making $8-9 million on a team that's payroll is in the 30s or 40s,
right,
you got to get production there. And finally they are. So without a doubt, Jeremy, a really good sign. I still don't think he figures into the long-term plans here. And look, here's the reality. He's got one home run. And right, if he only hits one home run in May, it's not going to be a good scenario. So hopefully this is the start of a potential, let's just call it a 20 home run season from Corey Dickerson, because like Duvall, he can get hot and we're seeing that now.
It would be amazing to see that. And especially considering he was batting cleanup yesterday, that was where he was in the order with everybody moving up. Yeah. It's crazy where this Marlins roster has to be situated. And look, you feel good if you're the Marlins too on this front. Aguilar carrying the offense there, Duvall, as you mentioned, Chisholm for moments. And in the three games against Milwaukee, the bats really woke up. And that was when the Marlins made the decision to sit Lewis Brinson and Magnery Sierra and start Adam Duvall in center field. And when you can get Duvall, Cooper, Dickerson, and Aguilar all in the lineup, like we mentioned before the season, that's going to be helpful. The problem is, it took Starling Marte being out to make it happen. But in this scenario, that should help the Marlins moving forward. And Adam Duvall looks like a pretty solid center fielder defensively.
Yeah, he can handle the position without a doubt. I don't know that you want him out there for 150 games, but there's no question that playing, let's say, 4 days a week of center field would seem to be of the realm of possibility. And look, Duvall's offense has scuffled a lot. He's striking out almost 50% of the time. And you'd hate to think that the great defense will be overshadowed by the offensive woes that he has. But I do think that he'll pick it up. He's not a player that I'm particularly worried about. But you're right. That has been a great on-field 26-man roster move to do that. And so, you know, but again, the other side of that too is that it's a forced move because of Marte. And most teams do not have somebody else to play that is up to the level of Marte, but But I would also be transparent in saying the Marlins' depth is so poor at those positions that they shouldn't really always be forced into that position. You would think that a club that is ranked top five in overall prospects, I mean, would have someone to be able to come up that could play without regurgitating the same players, as you mentioned, Lewis Brinson, Magnus Sierra, over and over again.
Right.
And if it was only Marte, there'd be no excuse. Now, I understand that, look, there's a lot more than that. There's a lot of players out. You can't possibly expect them to have seven reserves or six reserves somewhere to be able to play. But the dynamic that they've chosen to go is rather than a Sean Rodriguez or a Logan Forsythe has been to either play the guys that are there or call up as they did with Jose Devers. And I don't know that that is the winning recipe. In my opinion, I think that it may be time to try someone new, or maybe even try one of the prospects that's sitting in the minor league somewhere, whether that is Connor Scott, maybe giving him his first opportunity to play. I think that should be in the discussion. Wow. Joe Dunand, who played third base and I thought played pretty well in the spring, surprised that he was not even considered to be a call up because of the 40-man issue that he would have created. So Marlins are going to have to decide at some point if they're really in this to try and win or worry about the 40 man, because that move that they made last Wednesday with Brian Anderson and Devers, I understand it had to be done because they didn't have a backup option, even though I feel like that wasn't the right move. They could have corrected that. And it took a few days. They did. And then all of a sudden Eason Diaz shows up, right? Like, where was he? I'm not saying Diaz is the answer, but.
And like, Diaz apparently was call. Well, and according to Mattingly, after the game on Wednesday, Diaz was with them in San Francisco at some point. So you wonder how quickly he got out there and how quickly that call had to be made. But yeah, that part of it is also confusing.
It's very weird.
So
yeah, very.
As they have the day off today, you hope that this is a moment to sort of be able to collectively regroup and make some of those decisions that you're talking about. But as we look at other aspects of the Marlins here too, and before we get to sort of wrapping things up, I did want to take a moment to focus on that starting pitching in particular. The bullpen's been really solid, but obviously the Marlins starting pitching has been really good. Sandy Alcantara and Pablo Lopez have both been terrific, but the guy who has blown everyone away, who leads left-handed pitchers in Major League Baseball in strikeouts, it's Trevor Rogers, who has just been lights out and has now outdueled both Jacob DeGrom and Corbin Burnes this season, has won games against both of those guys. Craig, I mean, we talked a lot about Trevor Rogers as a guy that we both thought could have a really good year, but I don't think either of us expected this quickly.
No, my fantasy teams should thank him on all teams that I have because that's been really good for me for sure. He may end up being the best pick I've ever had in fantasy, and at least maybe 10 or... you know, I got to go back and look. I don't want to say that, but it feels like he's been one of the best picks that I've had because he was an undrafted player or a player that I was at a salary cap had such a low number. But yeah, he's been fantastic. He between the three pitchers that they have at the top of that rotation, they don't have the names that some of the other pitchers do around the league, but they're competing at the same level as those. So. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they've left any doubt that they're all there to stay. They're all there to pitch in the big leagues at a very high level. And, you know, when they announce the rookie of the month next week, now with Jazz out, I would assume Trevor Rogers is the winner. Ian Anderson's had a good month. Dylan Carlson has had a good month. But I try to keep it as real as I can and be unbiased. I've seen those players play as well. But I think Rogers has been the best rookie in the National League in April. And I hope he wins that award for Miami's sake. And first round pick working out for them, that's another big part of an organization, is making sure that you hit on some of those picks. And I know this was a previous regime pick, and I've told that wacky story many times here on the podcast too about how it wasn't necessarily the pick that they wanted, but it was the pick that they made. Yep. I take it back. It was the pick that they wanted. They were almost forced to change it, but they ended up not changing it. So that was a really good thing. But you're right. It is. Again, the pitching that they have is going to keep them in games the whole season. The only question will have to be the offense, and can it show any form of consistency? You cannot say at this point, at the end of the month, that they have been consistent offensively at all. There has been none. It is one game of seven runs, another two games of no runs at all. And there is no other way that you could look at it. You just don't have a clue what they're going to do on a game-to-game basis. Yes, they've lost a couple of players, no doubt, but there will not be surviving the course of the season, I think, without either some call-ups or some upgrades, because even with all of the offensive players that they have playing every day, still inconsistent, still not hitting every day. And we knew that going in. So it just comes down to what they want to do. Do they want to go for this thing in July, or do they feel like they don't have enough? I don't know what the answer will be, but we still have 3 months to get there.
Yeah, we do. And it's been fun. I mean, it's been fun. Like, one way or another, this first month has certainly been interesting. It's been entertaining. It's with been the really ups and downs. It's been really, really entertaining. And that's been a joy just from getting baseball back in that way. And yeah, seeing performances like from Trevor Rogers and Sandy Alcantara, who are both guys that project well to continue to dominate. Right. All right. As we wrap this thing up and the Marlins head to a 3-game series here in Washington against the Nationals before coming home for 6 games, 3 against Arizona and 3 against Milwaukee. What are your thoughts as we move forward as the Marlins head to Washington?
Yeah, look, they you know, as we get out of the first month of the season, you're going to play everyone in the National League and then some teams in the American League. Over the course of a season, there are going to be patches where you play against good teams, bad teams. They've sort of been in the middle as far as the competition in my mind that they've played against. The Giants are playing a little bit over their heads, probably. I would think most people agree with that. But yet they did win the season series against the Marlins. The Marlins also, as they were injured, they also went into play against Milwaukee, who had arguably their best two players out and called up a guy to pitch against them who was an absolute disaster on Wednesday and who got put on the injured list immediately after the game. So they split against Baltimore, you know, like, so I don't get into the minutiae of that often, which is kind of where I've come to the conclusion at the end of this month that I feel like their record is really accurate. I really look at their record right now and say they've kind of played like this, winning some, losing some. That's a 500 team. They may get above 500. They may fall even further below 500. But I think that this, it's strange to say, but I do think April is a pretty good sample of the team that they are. They're going to play against Washington. Juan Soto is going to be back this weekend. Steven Strasburg is out for them. Then they're going to get to play against Arizona, I think, in the early part of next week. The Diamondbacks have had their issues too. The Diamondbacks' best player, you could make the case, Ketel Marte, has not played at all this season. Zach Gallen missed the first 2 months of the season. What am I getting at here? What I'm getting at here is that, and I'm engaging a little bit more on social media about this because it is troubling. It is bothering me a little bit, is that I feel like there are a lot of people who follow us and a lot of people who follow the Marlins that don't have the full view of what's going on in Major League Baseball. And as a fan, you have the right, especially on social media or on anywhere else, to say whatever you want. You can feel however you want. But it doesn't mean that your view as a fan is the same as being accurate in terms of the game. And it just simply is not. There are massive cluster injuries to every team, a lot of teams in Major League Baseball. The Brewers are a great example of one of them. You took away Christian Yelich, Colton Wong, and Lorenzo Cain for a long time. I know that Wong just came back. The Nationals were playing without Juan Soto and Steven Strasburg for almost the whole month. The Chicago White Sox, would you trade all the Marlins players, Jeremy, that are out? Roy Jimenez, Luis Robert, and Lance Lynn? You may.
Goodness.
That's who the White Sox are playing without. Eloy Jimenez, Luis Robert, and Lance Lynn.
Those two guys, those two hitters. Goodness.
I mean, so, you know, I mean, Yermin Mercedes is playing and playing very well. Guess what?
He is.
You know, the Christian Yelich is out. Who the bleep is Billy McKinney? I don't know, but they call him up and he's hitting too. And to just constantly see this, oh my gosh, and we're out and all these guys are out and they're hurt. I get it. And look, Jazz does sort of put things over the top a little bit.
Yeah.
I will fully admit that. But this is going on way too much. I mean, the excuses have got to stop. When you have players who are out, what you should be looking at are further stories into the organization. Why don't the Marlins have the players to call up that will contribute offensively immediately? Why not? Those are the questions that you should be asking. You should also be asking eventually at some point, is this a coincidence with all these injuries? What's going on here? Why are all the Marlins players why isn't anybody asking that question? Is that I don't know. Is it a fair question? Is it not? Maybe we should ask that question. Why did Alfaro have a hamstring injury and he came back and got hurt again? Why is Brian Anderson on a plane going to San Francisco and then getting put on the injury list? Why is Eliezer Hernandez? Oh, he's got a blister. Oh, no, he's got something else. What about, Marte? Is it oblique? I don't know. Maybe somebody should ask these questions. Maybe I'm the one that's going to have to ask. I'm not ready to do that yet. I do think that it's probably coincidental and they do have a lot of injuries. But ask those questions. Don't just be a fan and say, we have a million guys out and we're never going to win. Last year, you had a million guys out and you won and you went to the postseason, right? Other excuses. Oh, we blew all these saves and oh my gosh. And if this save wasn't blown and this didn't happen, okay, fine. Then the Marlins didn't deserve to go to the postseason. Oh my gosh. What are you saying, Craig? They didn't deserve it? No, the Phillies did. What do you mean? Oh, well, the Phillies, they blew 21 saves in 60 games and played without JT Realmuto and Rhys Hoskins the last 2 weeks. Okay, so I'm going to take the Marlins out of last year's postseason and say they didn't deserve it. I'm going to put the Phillies in there because they blew 21 saves. What are we doing here? What are we? It's early in the season. There are going to be injuries. Players are going to be out. Maybe Miami will call someone up. That will be good. It's possible. It won't be Jose Devers, unfortunately, but maybe Eason Diaz will be. Maybe this is it. Possibly. Those are the questions to ask. Who is next up? Who can be called up? We're hearing about building an organization, building a farm system. Though that should be the focus. Take a look at the minors. Where's Connor Scott? How close is Blade? How's Jesus Sanchez doing? The Marlins want to tell us for the last 2 years, look at our great farm system and beat their chest like it's Godzilla versus King Kong. But none of these King Kongs are coming up and hitting. They all come up and they go 0-7 with 6 strikeouts. And we hear about their at-bats being so good. And then they go back down. So again, as a fan, you have the right. You have the distinction of saying whatever you want. You should never have that taken away from you. But don't confuse yourself being a fan of a team and understanding how baseball works and not being able to look at other teams and say that because the Marlins blew saves, that's why they should be better than they are. The Oakland A's won 13 games in a row and their closer hasn't pitched a game this season. The one the Marlins wanted everybody to sign, Trevor Rosenthal, has not pitched a game. Not one. They won 13 games without him. Some close ones too, Jeremy.
Right.
It's part of baseball. This is it. Jazz, yes, I understand. Mm-hmm. A little bit over the top here now. That's taking it to another level. But before that, to that point, to have that be your focus, as opposed to not fixing the problems, just talking about the problems, find ways to fix the problems. Become more educated. Become a better fan. That is my suggestion.
Yeah, well, and I understand, the hyper-localized perspective from a fan. It's no different than, when we're having these conversations on Heat Twitter as guys missed games with COVID or injuries or whatever, and you look at the other teams all across the NBA dealing with those same issues. There's always a sort of hyper-localized perspective from the fan based off of, okay, here are my teams in my division at the most, let alone individually, here's my team. And when, in those first 7 games or so, Starling Marte looked like arguably the only competent hitter on that roster, right, and then that's the guy that goes down. That's why I think that sort of got elevated in everybody's mind. Then it's Brian Anderson, who's everybody's homegrown. We want to extend him. So I think the names on the players as well is part of what specifically affected the fan base there. But you're right. Through those first number of games, you deal with blown saves. You deal with injuries just like everyone else. To me, I think what has been frustrating is the way that this discourse has ended up is almost divided, as opposed to everyone coming together and saying, think about how amazing that is, that they're 11-13, they're 500, they're middling despite the inconsistency, despite the ability or the inability to replace those players with the proper prospects. And yet, because of the pitching, here we are, and they sit at 11-13. And they can be the team that we've all enjoyed watching thus far. So hopefully going forward,
they do get a bit healthier.
It should be about moving forward as opposed to looking back.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to look back and try and say this should have been a win or this could have been a loss. And if that Jazz didn't get hurt, I mean, don't you think, I mean, the Phillies GM got fired last year. He got fired. They had JT and Hoskins out and blew 21 saves. They fired the GM. I mean, think about that. Okay. I mean, you could
really looking back at it. Crazy.
I mean, you could make the case that, I mean, the Marlins are kind of in the same spot. They got a lot of injuries. They're blowing saves at the beginning of the year. I mean, and then you would never, it would be blasphemous to say, oh, we got to fire the GM.
Well, we have 162 as well.
It's just making excuses instead. I'm just telling you, you can live a happier life watching these games, enjoying them for what they are, and figuring out who's next, and like Don Mattingly said, who's the next man up, who's the next guy up. The Herald covered on the Marlins, they gave away 1 million meals during the pandemic, which is obviously great. And I've been waiting to hear Derek Jeter make his first comment. He hasn't made on baseball, it's been a while since he's talked. And he was asked, the Herald asked him about the injuries. And as I would expect, the dude made no excuses whatsoever. Yeah, the first thing out of his mouth was, everybody's got injuries. We got to win. That's what it is.
The big thing is, guys, it's a bit early to just be like, if we're sitting here in July and Starling Marte and Jazz Chisholm haven't played a game since this podcast, okay, we can have this conversation about injuries derailing a season. But I think when we're only not even a month into the season, we're sitting here at 24 games in, handpicking every blown save, every injury, it's too exhausting. So
And to go back and say, if these guys weren't hurt, the Marlins would be 17-1 or 18-1 or some nonsense like that. Or, oh my gosh, they wouldn't have lost this game if they would have had this player. At the end of the season, I assure you, no one's going to care.
No one's going to go back
and look and say this happened. I mean, is anyone going to go back at the end of the season, Jeremy, and give the Brewers credit? Because guess what? The Brewers could have the umpires. I think the umpires may have blown that game on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Completely blown call at the beginning of the game. I screenshotted a pitch that was shown to Aguilar. It was a strike. It's a 1-2 call instead of 2-1. The pitcher changes the way he pitches to Aguilar. He doesn't hit that home run. Marlins may lose, but it's okay. This is what happens over the course of the season. So with the umps and the injuries and the what ifs, and we should go back and it would have been better if this or that or the other. No, move forward. Find the next guy. You can be upset that your guys are out. You could wish that they came back. But it's happening everywhere. I mean, what happens in July if Trout and Ohtani are out? Oh my! Right. So the Marlins are all healthy. So then what? At that point,
catch up.
I mean, that's it. You know.
I think a big thing that is so important to focus on with Major League Baseball is that, look, I'm someone who, part of, you know, my new job and my job right here with you is to cover every single game and have reactions and analysis to every single game. But as a fan and as someone who consumes an entire season of Major League Baseball, it's really, really important to keep the long view of marathon, not sprint. And I do believe that after a season where the Marlins made the playoffs and thus have just about as much, if not more, interest than they've had since they moved into that new ballpark, right? With all these young kids coming up, with everything that is around this team coming out of feeling like you're coming out of the pandemic, everybody is so hyper-focused and in the mindset of last year's 60-game season where every single game had that weight
to
it. Guys, it's 162 games. It's two and a half. I mean, it's almost three times the schedule of what you had last year. it is one of those things where when you're playing 162 games, that random blown save on April 10th or whatever is not going to matter the same way or be looked at the same way as your perfect example, the Phillies last year, who likely would have made a move and evened things out. So I think it's just important that we always sort of take that long view at a season. But when you want to be breaking these things down day to day, when you have that passion behind your team and you want to be talking about these things on a day-to-day discussion, well, that's why we're here. That's what we enjoy. We're here for you on Twitter. We're here for you with our coverage, whether it's, you know, Craig over at Sports Grid, me with Bally Sports Florida, and us here at, you know, Swings and Mishes. Like, that's why we have this coverage, to be able to discuss with you guys on the day-to-day. And that's what makes all of this so much fun, to me at least, with Major League Baseball.
Right. I'm going to end with this because somebody asked me this the other day. It was interesting. I think when Burns pitched against the Marlins, somebody asked me because they watched me on Sports Grid. And at the beginning of the season, I picked Burns to win the Cy Young. Mm. So he was 35-1 at the beginning of the season. And that may shock some people that I did that. I don't like to pat myself on the back for things. That's not who I am. But I did pick that to win the Cy Young. They asked me who I thought, and I thought it would be Burns. He may not win it. It may be DeGrom. Burns didn't look really good against the Marlins, honestly. So who knows? Maybe it's a horrible pick. But somebody asked me because of that, because they watch Sports Grid, like, who are you rooting for tonight? Because you picked Burns to win the Cy Young, and yet he's playing against the Marlins. I want to be clear on something here. When the Marlins win, it is better for all of us. It is better for the fans. It is better for Swings and Mishes. It is better for Jeremy. It is better for all of us. On top of that, I am a father. My son is 8. He watches every single Marlins game that he can from start to finish. He has posters of all of the Marlins players in his room.
I love it.
And the bobbleheads. And he wears Marlins stuff all the time. So that should give you perspective on this. And I hope it gives you a little bit more perspective to understand that there is a separation of doing what I do, but also understanding as a father, I have the same view of the fans because my son is a fan and I'm explaining things to him from the fan side. He doesn't completely get it. He thinks I'm a fan, sort of, that covers Marlins. Like it doesn't completely register to him. So I see the fan side of it. Mm-hmm. And I want everyone to understand that. Like I get it. I understand where you're coming from. I've been a fan too. I have a son who is a fan, but I'm also realistic. And you can't look back on this stuff. You got to look forward. You want to be a better fan. Do a deeper dive. Find out more about an organization. What are the answers to the problems as opposed to just keep going back to the problems? No one wants to live in yesterday. Live in tomorrow.
Is this when I let everyone know I'm a shill for the Marlins because I had a Derek Jeter fathead in my room till I was 20 years old? Or do I just sort of let that one
go? Anybody want to see the jersey that's being covered
it's
up?
It's literally right behind
my office that I'm doing here. It's embarrassing to even say that I have all these jerseys, these baseball jerseys in my office. I mean, look.
It's perfect. Well, this was a fun animated episode. I really enjoyed it. Craig, as always, enjoyed this episode of Swings with you. And Marlins fans, as always, remember to please follow along with us at Swings and Mishes on Twitter, at Swings and Mishes on Instagram, at Craig Mish individual. Oh, Craig, do you have something here?
Yes. And on that note, I should also mention, I forgot to mention this as well. You know what? We'll save it for next week. I changed my mind. I'm going to save it.
Look at that. A teaser for everybody. You're going to want to tune in next week.
You know what?
Week.
I almost wanted to give something away here at the end, but I didn't want to do it. I'm going to save something good for everybody for next week. How about that? I'm going to leave it.
Oh, I love that. All right. That's where we'll leave it. Swings and Mishes fans, like, subscribe, rate, review, unsubscribe, resubscribe, re-review. Do all of the things that you're supposed to do to help our podcast. And be sure to help our friends over at Symbol by signing up at symbol.app/swings for your $10 promo code. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Swings and Mishes. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend, as do the rest of us here with Swings and Mishes.
Do you ever feel like you're always on, your phone is blowing up with notifications, you have commitments to friends and family, and not to mention work? Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. It's a crisp and refreshing beer that even tells you it's cold when the mountains on the bottles and cans turn blue. When I need to hit reset, I grab a Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to coorslight.com/bluewire. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.